Never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. A world dismissed as conspiracy by those who want to keep its secrets hidden. Exposing the dangers, denials, and deceptions. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.
And ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No. Because I'm going to get him.
Welcome to this episode of the Hagman and Hagman Report. We're coming to you live from our radio and television studios right here in beautiful Northwest Pennsylvania. I want to say thank you for all of you joining us. Thank you for walking hand in hand with us, standing side by side as we fight the tyrannical globalist Luciferian agenda. We are locked and loaded. I would urge everyone to saddle for battle. It's coming. It's coming. For those new to the program, we broadcast live Monday through Friday, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern. Be here, or you can catch us on our archive, at the archive, anytime, 24/7. But our flagship network is the Global Star Radio Network. Global Star Radio Network. Just, folks, go to HagmanHagman.com. That's our show website. And click on the link right to GSR. You can listen to us live, and you can also watch us live on our official YouTube channel via the same. Well, just go to HagmanHagman.com, and you'll see all of the navigational tools right there, links right there. We simulcast on Blog Talk Radio. You can watch us live by archive, as I said. Don't forget, we've got two websites. HagmanandHagman.com and HagmanReport.com. We also have the grand opening of our store, which was last week, or the week before. We're still having a grand opening. And that's HagmanReportStore.com. Now, we only have just a handful of products right now. All right? We'll get more. More's in store. That sounded funny. More's in store. But seriously, more will be coming. We're very picky about things. Like, I'm very picky about things. Just a shameless plug for the Hagman Report store. It took a long time to, like, pick out a t-shirt blend of, for example, I had to ask me made in the United States, and even the mugs. No, got to be made in the United States. Sorry. And that's got, we went through a whole bunch of companies to settle on this particular mug, which is made in the USA. Just ask Eric. He's sitting on about 140 of them right now. Literally sitting on them. No, I'm the boxes. And, With the things like that, you've got to buy a minimum quantity, for example. So, but anyway, I'm Doug Hagman at the helm with fellow investigator researcher and my son Joe Hagman. We are something I like to call the Hagman Report, America's premier father-son investigative reporting team. How about last night's program? Joe did a great job. What he did was he just opened the microphone and then he walked away, had dinner. I think he might have wined and dined
a sponsor.
And then came back. Yeah.
Then after the second hour, brought us in, went and got ice cream.
Yeah, yeah.
Took a nap.
Well, why do I look dead? Seriously, why do we look like we're dead on the video? Like, my tan's gone.
Because your spray tan washes off.
Spray
in the
tan,
shower.
Yeah. No. I mean, it's been sunny up here.
It's been beautiful.
But you look...
Yep. We got our new...
Oh, that camera.
We got our new old camera back.
All right.
So we switched.
Because I look pale.
Look
at that. See? See, I look pale. I mean, can you...
Maybe you're dead. Maybe you're dead.
Hmm. Anyway, no. So, folks, thanks. We're kind of dragging a little bit here, only because we're waiting for a number of people to join us tonight. A lot of news to get into. We're going to be reclaiming some ground tonight that we haven't really, things that we haven't addressed.
Back up. We're waiting for a number of people to join us tonight?
Well, I mean the listeners. Okay. The last night's show was just amazing with Tom Horn. If you don't know about the Sybil prophecies, it's just very interesting. I don't want to get into that because we could talk for an entire program about this, but some of the things that Tom Horn said and Steve said last night about the prophetic developments and even the papal, the Vatican developments. And don't forget, folks, it was on our show that Tom Horn and Chris Putnam had said that the Pope was going to resign. Remember that?
Yep.
And he did. So we are breaking new ground. Or we have been breaking new ground for the last couple of years. Now, one thing, here are our plans. Just we'll share them with you. Kind of like we're all just sitting around the table here and talking. Joe and I and Eric are going to be covering the conventions, the Democrat and Republican conventions, Cleveland, Ohio, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I'm going to dress up Eric in a Make America Great Again T-shirt and cap and throw them in the crowds at the Democratic convention.
I'll film.
Yeah, and we're getting intelligence and information, and this is and I've gotten some emails about this, and I'll address this. But one of the things that we're going to be doing is covering really what the mainstream media will not cover, and that's the fact that you've got groups right now. Specifically Soros groups, Soros-funded groups. And people hear that name and they kind of, it turns them off. It's like, okay, Soros is responsible for everything. Well, in many cases he is with respect to the funding of the Black Lives Matter, many of these demonstrating groups that are already planned and they've got blocks of rooms, for example, in Cleveland. I'm going to tell you right now, expect problems in Cleveland. And I did receive an email to the individual who sent me, who's part of the training that's taking place right now for Cleveland. And you know who you are. You sent me an email. I'm talking to you now. You live in Ohio, in EMS, and I'm talking to you. I got your email. I did not respond to it, but I read it, and I will respond to it. I know that sounds rather cryptic, but there were a couple of others as well listening and living in the Cleveland area, greater Cleveland. Well, when I say that, I'm saying anywhere from Cleveland to Canton. And we'll be talking. We'll be just hang on, because you can perhaps be of assistance for us. It's not that the response. I've been collecting the information. But on the other side of the coin too, you have to understand, we get a lot of emails and we don't know. Well, how can I put this? There are people out there who say they are something and they're not. We also have been going through a series of weird things here at the studio, at our respective homes, at our respective, at the office, that we have to increase our perimeter security. Just so you know, I'm not going to get into any details, except to say it's getting pretty serious out there. And I would urge everyone listening to this, Joe, I was thinking about this today. We're coming into a time period. This, perhaps between now and the end of January, is perhaps the most critical time in modern American history. And I think that means as a nation, but that also means for people like us and for people like you. I mean that. And you might think, well, I'm nobody, you know, because I say the same thing, I'm nobody. But I think you're going to see some things take place that you wouldn't ordinarily think they would. You wouldn't automatically think that they would be taking place. I'm not trying to scare anyone. I'm just saying that there are things out there that are taking place that kind of make you go, huh. Before we go further, I want to remind everyone that Portions of Tonight's broadcast brought to you by Whole Tones. Have you gone to WholeTonesLive.com yet? Folks, go to Whole Tones Live. Whole Tones Live. That's with a W. WholeTonesLive.com. You see, we listen to Whole Tones Live because it offsets the mental anguish, the strife, the uneasiness. Whole Tones Live is a great product, ladies and gentlemen. You can play it in the background and of your home, of your office. My wife plays it right before when she gets into bed. And actually, there are frequencies there that address, you know, that help you drift off to sleep. And when I say frequencies, it'd be like, songs, but at specific frequencies. Or you can play in the background at your office to make your productivity better. I received an email yesterday, and I'll get into this later, but I got an email yesterday from someone who works at a university. And very interesting email about Whole Tones and about his findings about Whole Tones. So, but later on that. All right, Joe, what do you want to get into first? Because we've got a lot.
That is a great question.
I mean, we there's a smattering of stuff that we need to talk about.
Well, we do have Trump has talked about Vince Foster and the Clinton connections. We got TSA news. I'd like to start from this article from yesterday.
Hold off on the Foster stuff if you can.
Okay.
Right.
This article from Wayne Madsen. CIA links top Hillary donor, George Soros, to terrorist bombing. In an era of growing false flag terrorist incidents, a formerly top secret Central Intelligence Agency document, the National Intelligence Daily of February 4th, 1987, strongly suggests a George Soros connection to a terrorist bombing in what was then Czechoslovakia. In 86 to 87 saw the early effects of the Soviet leader Gorbachev's policies began to take effect in Eastern Europe. George Soros, whose insider currency speculation made him one of only a few Wall Street vampires to make out financially in the crash of October of 87, began to take advantage of the situation in Eastern Europe. Anyways, this article by Wayne Madsen goes on to link George Soros to a bombing that happened. And there's so much here. If you go to the Madsen Report, you can read up on this article. But what I find interesting about this is what they're doing here is dated back to 86, 87. Here
right,
we are.
Right.
How many years later? The same people funding these things. The same leaders. Hillary being the, you know, front runner for the Democratic presidential nomination. And the same tactics. Terrorism. Done by the CIA, as Wayne Mattson.
Right. And Wayne Mattson's a good source.
Yeah.
So, all right.
And the question is asked, did George Soros authorize acts of terrorism against the Czechoslovakian government? If so, why has Mr. Soros not been charged or put in prison for aiding and abetting acts of terrorism in Europe? CIA analysts of the terrorist attacks concluded that the violence may have represented the work of an outside group. Again, the finger pointed at Soros. An entire paragraph in the report on the Czechoslovakian bombing campaign remains redacted by the CIA. The CIA believed that the bombings were conducted in order to mobilize the usually apathetic Czechoslovakian population, and the CIA, its own sordid history of waking up apathetic populations through the use of false flag terror attacks. Mr. Soros is a major contributor to Hillary Clinton's campaign. Soros' possible activities in 86-87 may eventually show that Mrs. Clinton's campaign was financed and backed by a roller of terrorism. Again, go to WayneMattsonReport.com. Mm-hmm. You can subscribe to his newsletter and read his detailed article on this, which they have pictures. Charter 77, a New York organization funded by Soros. That's what this ties back to, and back to the Communist Party, where the bombing of the Czechoslovakian Communist Party headquarters at I'm not even going to try to pronounce that down, and other attempted attacks at party buildings alarmed authorities and led to heightened securities across facilities in Prague and other governments in Czechoslovakia. But Soros is behind all this financially, according to Wayne Mattson's articles, which is very interesting. And tying that into our next piece, you said hold off on the Trump.
Let's do that, because I do have some comments on Foster.
Okay. Well, we have last week we had Michael Snyder on the show. Mm-hmm. And he's come out with a great article today about the Pope. One World Religion cometh. Pope Francis warmly welcomes top Islamic cleric to the Vatican. Excuse me. Says, so precisely, what kind of message was Pope Francis attempting to convey? Sheikh Ahmed Al-Tayeb is the Grand Imam of Cairo's Al-Azhar Mosque, and some have described him as the highest figure in the Sunni Islam. The Daily Mail said the meeting between the two men was a historic bid to reopen dialogue between the two churches. And as you will see below, this is yet another in a long series of attempts by Pope Francis to build bridges between Catholicism and various other faiths. In the end, what are we to make of all this? Could it be possible that Pope Francis is laying the groundwork for the super world church, the coming one world religion that David Wilkerson and so many others have warned about, the interfaith movement? Pope Francis made sure that when he embraced Sheikh Ahmed Al-Tayeb, there would be plenty of reporters there to document the moment. And it goes on in the article to list some of the reporters' comments. But the key here is the interfaith dialogue, the intermingling of Islam and Christianity and Catholicism.
And this is so important to understand. What we need to understand is this. In order for a new world order, in order for the globalists, and people have a tendency to dislike the new world order the terminology or the phrase new world order. They think it's all conspiracy nonsense. But in order for us to have a new world order, what the powers that be, what the powers beyond the powers need to do is they need to basically outlaw all the monotheistic religions. They need to change the monotheistic religions. They need to remove Jesus Christ out of the equation, out of the entirety of the Christian model.
Okay. Now, Pope Francis, Snyder continues, very early in his papacy, he authorized Islamic prayers and readings from the Quran at the Vatican for the first time ever. And as I documented in a previous article entitled In New York, Pope Francis Embraced Chrislam and Laid a Foundation for a One World Religion. During his visit to St. Patrick's Cathedral in Manhattan, he made it very clear that he believes Christians and Muslims worship the same God.
And that, remember when George W. Bush had said that, you know, we worship the same God. That's a lie from the, straight from the pits of hell. We don't worship the same God. And this is why, and it can be argued that even Christians and Jews don't worship the same God. Now, I'm not going to go there only because that's a lengthy conversation that's very deep. And people will take it the wrong way if it's not given the proper amount of time and information. But clearly, the God of Islam is not the same as the God of Christianity. Clearly, the God of Islam is arguably based on a moon god, all right? A lunar god. Ours is not. But in order for the Christians to accept or to be accepted into a global governance, they have to distill all three major monotheistic religions. Now, that doesn't mean, and people say, well, it might ask, what about Hinduism and Buddhism and all of that?
No,
well,
that's okay. That's dealt with.
Fine. Here. Well, yeah.
Pope Francis explains in a video that Mike Snyder puts in his report,
right,
that people all over the world are seeking God or meaning God in different ways, and that there is only one certainty that we have for all. We are all God's children. It says about the 22nd mark, leaders from various major religions are shown declaring what they believe. First, a female Buddhist announces, I have confidence in the Buddha. Second, a Jewish rabbi declares, I believe in God. Thirdly, a Catholic priest says, I believe in Jesus Christ. Lastly, an Islamic leader is shown saying, I believe in God Allah. If you have not seen this video, it is one of the creepiest things I have ever seen on YouTube. It has become exceedingly clear that Pope Francis believes all major religions are completely valid paths to the same God, and there is virtually no uproar over this.
Well,
and he's right on the money.
There needs to be an uproar. There needs to be people to say, look, you're this is rotten thinking. This is thinking that's wrong to the core. I mean,
yeah, and he closes it out with this. He says, this just shows how late in the game we really are. The one world religion that was prophesied nearly 2,000 years ago in the book of Revelation is coming to life. We are witnessing the events of the last days beginning to unfold right in front of our eyes. And that's something we've been saying. That's something our guests have been saying.
Yep.
That many people have been talking about. We are in the throes of the last of the last days. I mean, we're not in the tribulation yet, but we are going through these birth pangs.
Right.
We are seeing the earth changes. We are seeing the political upheaval, specifically in the Middle East.
Yep. Yep, exactly.
And it continues to get worse. And then Syrian refugees, top headline on Dredge right now. Syrian refugees flood in. This is a problem that continues, and they're saying that the immigration situation, the flooding in of refugees into this country, will double or triple in the next few months what has happened in the last few years. So we're at the beginning still, beginning stages of this invasion, if you'll call it that.
Right. Well, let me, I guess at this point, because this is incredibly important to what's going on today. Let me talk about Vince Foster. Let's talk about Vince Foster. All right. Trump obviously, he went there.
Mm-hmm.
The Gateway Pundit reported yesterday. Some think the death of Vince Foster was absolutely a murder. Now, let me preface what I'm about to say with this. There are people out there who will attempt to, not tell the entire truth when it comes to the Hillary Rodham Clinton and her dealings and Vince Foster. They'll stipulate, for example, well, Foster committed suicide, just not in the park, all right?
Yeah, okay. There's no blood.
Well, right. But here is, and I don't believe them. And even worse, those people who propose that or and perpetuate that theory, and it is a theory, as is mine, but those people who say and write about and report on the death of Vince Foster, is it being a suicide? In other words, where Foster himself did pull the trigger, to me, represent a greater threat. The people who perpetuate that represent a greater threat to the truth than those who say, well, nah, it was, you know, I mean, it was totally be able to kill himself in the park, and it is what it is, and end of story. Anything else is conspiracy nonsense. Because mixed with that lie, or mixed with the truth of finding the body in the park, and perhaps he was moved, and whatever, yes, he was. But do I believe he himself committed suicide? No, I don't. I believe he was murdered. I believe it was murder.
Did you see the piece from World and Daily on this from Jerome Corsi?
Yeah, Jerome Corsi has written extensively about this. Christopher Ruddy has written extensively about this. But yes, I did.
Okay.
World Net Daily. But we're talking in 1993, Clinton White House advisor, longtime friend of both Bill and Hillary, but specifically Hillary, Vince Foster Jr., committed suicide, or was found dead in Fort Marcy Park. Now, he was the highest-ranking government official to die under mysterious circumstances since JFK. Hillary Clinton waited 30 hours, and get this, 30 hours before telling Bill about the suicide note, the alleged suicide note left behind by Foster. Now, in the context of Donald Trump and today's story, and yesterday's story, but today it's gaining traction. Donald Trump suggested Foster's death was absolute murder. The Washington Post, what they said was they said was Trump is reviving some of the ugliest political chapters. These are their words, not ours, of the 1990s, with escalating personal attacks on Bill Clinton's character, centered on past accusations of sexual assault and a concerted effort to smother Hillary Clinton's campaign message with the weight of decades of controversy. Well, okay. The Post, come on, are you serious?
We don't need Bill Clinton's baggage to bring Hillary down when it comes to controversy.
Well, they're joined at the hip, though. They're incestuous, obviously. In addition to being married, they're incestuous, but they're joined at the hip. So look at what the Washington Post is saying. When asked in an interview last week about the Foster case, Trump dealt with it as he has with many of the edgy topics, raising doubts about the official version of events, even as he says he doesn't plan to talk about it on the campaign trail. Now, he's backing away from it. He answered the question, but he's not going to make it a campaign issue. He called the theories of possible foul play very serious and the circumstances of Foster's death very fishy. He had intimate knowledge of what was going on. This is according to Trump, speaking of Foster's relationship. And he knew everything that was going on, and then all of a sudden he committed suicide. Well, that's BS. Now, that's according, I'm kind of paraphrasing here from the Post. Now, Trump said this, I didn't bring Foster's death up because I don't know enough to really discuss it, but I will say that there are people who continue to bring it up because they think it was absolutely a murder. I don't do that because I don't think it's fair. It's interesting. Again, and I want to caution people about the books and the writings out there when this is being discussed, because there's a lot of misinformation about this. Let me just go over some of the issues here with Vince Foster, because this, and I'll tell you why it's important. And you might think this is old news, we don't need to discuss it, it has no bearing on the current events. Well, it does. It does, because you've got what the Foster case does is it opens your eyes to a criminal cabal that exists within or inside the Beltway that directly involves Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton, and the people still in power today. The Clinton power machine has never gone, has never left the Beltway, never gone outside of, never left Washington. All right. So, and it's important because you've got the same playbook with Foster being, and what we'll do is we're going to do a show, I think, on Foster around the time of his anniversary, the anniversary of his death, because it's that important. There are so many anomalies, so many contradictions with respect to the death of the finding of Foster. The guy who discovered, for example, the body in Fort Marcy Park says he was curious about the cause of death. He looked closely for a gun. He said there was no gun at the scene. No gun in either hand. This guy looked very close. The FBI put a lot of pressure on this witness to change his testimony. Why? Did he interrupt the staging of a suicide? Perhaps that was only completed after he had left the scene. Now, let me just say this. You've got the FBI investigating Hillary Diane Rodham Clinton on an email situation. You had the FBI back then making an inquiry about the death of Vince Foster. The same criminal activity with the same criminals. The Department of Justice back in the 1990s versus the Department of Justice in 2016. The same tactics, the same playbook, and the same bottom line. Forensically, the powder burns found on both of Vince Foster's hands apparently came from powder discharge from the front of a gun cylinder. Now think about this. If you're going to commit suicide, you're going to hold the gun up to your head. You're not going to have powder burns on the barrel or from the front barrel of the gun. If he'd been gripping the handle, his hands would have had stain patterns, and I'm pointing now to the pad between my thumb and forefinger here. This is where you would have the powder burns, not here. This would indicate in every homicide or every situation like this that I've read or seen or researched, when somebody grabs the gun, the barrel of a gun, they're going to have powder burns around the
wound.
Around the fingers that is grasping the barrel. Not, but that's not where the powder burns, or that's where the powder burns were. So it would appear that he grabbed the barrel.
Yeah, you would get powder burns on the sleeve.
Yeah, the sleeve and the pad of the hand, the web between the, right. Now, the gun, it's interesting to note, too, that the gun was still in Foster's hand, and it's unusual.
His right hand, correct? Even though he was left-handed, the gun was in his right hand.
Right. Now, this is a .38 caliber, and if you've ever watched, and I had taken the, I'm certified in blood spatter analysis and forensic discipline of blood stain evidence analysis, and when you look at, if you've ever seen photographs, or if you've ever been unlucky enough to come into a situation where someone has shot themselves, especially in the head with a gun, with a handgun, a .38, most of the time, if not all of the time, the gun is not, you're not gonna, a person is not going to, the individual who shoots himself is not going to maintain a grip on that gun. It rarely, if ever, will a gun, and I'm talking about a pistol, stay in the hand of someone who discharges that in their mouth or in their head, because there's a powerful recoil behind it, and a .38 is usually thrown quite a ways. And I've seen it upwards of 20 feet across a room, even. Now, I don't know how many people remember seeing, for example. Now, there was a case, and this was interesting. It was different, but the obvious suicide of our Bud Dwyer, the Pennsylvania treasurer, which was caught on video. He used a .357 during a press conference.
Wasn't that in Meadville or something?
Yeah, that was down right. Yes, it was in that area. And he had, I remember because we had one of my... a gentleman I was dealing with was there at the conference, and he was telling me that, you know, it was just a whole weird, eerie thing that was going on. And Dwyer pulled the gun out of an envelope, put it in his mouth, again, a .357, and shot himself. Now, for our class, for the certification, we had that we were shown the unedited footage that was taken by a camera that was, I don't know, maybe 10 feet away. And, I mean, shown over and over and over again. And we had to analyze the spatter and the staining and such. It was a horrendous, I mean, I'll tell you something. I'll never forget having to go through that over and over again, both the sight and the sound of that. But anyway, it's interesting too, because there was no blood or tissue on the Foster gun found anywhere. Normally, the force of a powerful explosion inside the mouth, there's something called blowback. Okay, when you put a gun, for example, against a soft tissue, and you pull the trigger, there's blowback, blows back into the barrel, the tissue, blood blows back into the barrel and also around the barrel. And rarely do you ever find a situation like Foster's where no fingerprints are found on the exterior of the gun. Go figure. He wasn't wearing gloves. And the FBI came out and said, well, the lack of fingerprints suggests that there was a lack of sweat on Foster's hands. Come on, it was the humidity was like 95% on that day in 1993. The temperature that afternoon passed 95 degrees. Temperature humidity index reached 103. That's the, you know, feel. And if you consider, too, you're going to be sweating. If you're a normal person, you're going to be building up some sweat. If you're thinking about killing yourself. The feds also, the lab also found two fingerprints beneath the removable handle grips of the gun. The prints did not belong to Vincent Foster. No effort was made to identify those prints through the FBI, through AFIS, the fingerprint database. The gun, there's no evidence that this gun belonged to Foster that he used, or there was any evidence that this gun that they found at the scene that wasn't seen by the guy who found the body was ever fired the fatal shot. And his wife, his wife really didn't help matters any, and I'm not sure if I really could blame her, but she went to look for her husband's gun in its normal spot. He had a what one might call a silver gun, silver colored gun. That's, you know, but instead, no. No member of the Foster family who's looked at the gun that was used allegedly in his suicide said, yeah, that's his gun. So, who made the exchange and why? And don't forget, the ABC photo that was leaked during that time of Vince Foster's murder was black. Members of the family, Foster family, all said, no, that's not his gun. But yet, the FBI showed Foster, his widow, a silver gun and told her it was the gun found at the scene. So you have to ask yourself, why did the FBI do that? And again, compare the FBI's actions back in 93, 94, and subsequent to this murder to how they're handling the email situation today. Who are they working for? That's why, for example, when we look at the email criminal activity, or the criminal activity associated with the Clinton Foundation. Do you really think, folks, that we are going to get any answers? I don't think so. And I should mention, too, about Foster's gun that contained two cartridges, one spent, one unspent. They were stamped with a code indicated they were very high-velocity rounds, very powerful rounds, which is inconsistent with the fact that there was no large exit wound. And I will jump forward, because I can go through, actually I've got in my notes here, I've got 95 oddities surrounding the Foster murder. 95. And to go over all of them, I mean, I could perhaps make a pretty good case with the verification, with the citations, along with my 95 points that include obfuscation by the press, that include obfuscation by individuals, journalists, so-called journalists out there, saying, well, it was a suicide. The body was moved. No, it was a murder. And there is a, I believe this truly was a murder based on the totality of evidence. Now, I'm going back to nearly 30 years of my investigative experience. Do I know who did it? No. But I certainly can identify a suspect pool, and at the head of that suspect pool would be the very person running for office today, Hillary Diane Rodham Clinton. Did she pull the trigger? I don't think so. But I do believe that it was by her orders that he is no longer with us, Vince Foster. Again, these are my professional opinions only based on my recent research and investigation. I just want to make that clear. I don't have any inside information. I do have one bit of inside information. And that's something weird happened at the autopsy of Vince Foster. And here's perhaps why no one is talking about Vince Foster. I can't prove this. I was told this by one person, and it was confirmed by another, that Vince Foster, during the autopsy, there was an organ removed from Vince Foster, and that was his tongue. And it was shown to others, a couple of other individuals. Now, why would you do that? You talk, you wag your tongue, it's going to be served to you on a silver platter. Okay? Joe and I had gone down to Fort Mercy Park, and I'd gone down to Fort Mercy Park. Joe and I had gone down to Washington another time. But when I had gone down to Fort Mercy Park to look at the land and talk to some individuals, I did this, 2 years, I think it was 95? 95. I was there. And I've got pictures of me down there in Fort Mercy Park from 1995. Can you believe that? Yeah. Boy, I looked younger back then. But anyway, the reason I did that was I wanted, and even back then I had this curiosity, because I was more interested, and this was during the time I was interested in the forensic aspects of the case more, and I had really no clue about the political ramifications. I was more interested in the forensics and the activities. And then subsequent to that, I've gotten Chris Reddy's book, The Strange Death of Vince Foster. And then around that same time, and don't forget, folks, if you may recall, G. Gordon Liddy was, he had a radio show, and it was through G. Gordon Liddy's radio show that confidential witness came forward and said, look, I was there at the park and I saw things. And of course, he went to G. Gordon Liddy, and some say, well, that could have been a PR move or a big, It just, some people have said, well, the guy was grasping for attention, but Liddy vetted him pretty well, and I believe everything that this confidential witness said to Liddy, and Liddy's statements about the Foster case and this confidential witness, I believe to be true. The reason I say that, not because I necessarily like G. Gordon Liddy or have any opinion on him whatsoever, except that I believe that his statements are true with respect to this case. But who cares today? Who cares today? 23 years after the event. Right? You say, who cares? Because the power, the criminal cabal in D.C., a man was murdered. He was a husband. He was a father. At one time, he was a very powerful individual in Washington, in the Clinton White House. His secretary, of course, was Linda Tripp. Think about that for a moment. Anyway, the reason it's important today is because of the very same people who were involved in killing and murder and staging crime scenes and having them staged, I should say, and the sex, the incestuous sex, the perversion of things is happening today by the very same people. And the reason that's happening is because we didn't put a stop to it back then. So I just wanted to really... really push that and say, go Donald Trump. Yes, make statements and ask questions, because indeed this is one thing. And Ron Brown, don't forget about Ron Brown as well. Remember Ron Brown?
No.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Ron Brown, you remember Ron Brown, of course, who died in a plane crash. Whoops, wait a minute. We got a circular hole and a lead storm in his head. Yeah, Ron Brown. Also a member of the Clinton insider circle. Again, do you think perhaps that this is all just nothing? It doesn't matter. Of course it matters. Switching gears just real quick, Joe, and I'm going to turn it back to you. Indiana residents, if you're listening to this in Indiana, yeah. Okay. Beech Grove, Indiana, last night.
Did we go over?
Bang, bang. Yeah. Hey.
Military training wakes Beech Grove residents early Tuesday morning.
Are we at war?
Many residents of Beech Grove awoke early Tuesday morning to what they say sounded like gunshots and explosions.
Yep.
According to police officials, this activity was part of a scheduled military training exercise near the old fort, or the old St. Francis Hospital. Beech Grove residents say they saw low-flying helicopters over the area and heard what sounded like several loud explosions. But police said, don't worry, there's no threat to anybody. It's just a training exercise.
Folks, you train where you fight. See, we are preparing, and if this is not Exhibit A for urban warfare fighting, then I don't know what is. And people laugh and they scoff and they say, oh, come on, quit being such a conspiracy knucklehead when you talk about these things. Ask yourself why. Why are we having war drills? And this is what they are, simulated explosions, well, real explosions, but simulated raid on the old Francis Hospital, helicopters, the federalization of police, and everyone just pats you on the head and say, don't worry, son, don't worry. Just don't worry about this. Nothing to see here. Meanwhile, the residents are saying, we thought the world was ending. We thought there was a war out there. No one told us about a military drill or a paramilitary drill.
And that's been commonplace with a lot of these drills, is the lack of the military or police giving the military telling the police they're doing drills, or even the citizens in the areas where the drills are being conducted are unaware what is about to happen. So you can imagine the confusion, the chaos, the amount of fear that you would, I mean, imagine waking up and you let your dog out or take your dog for a walk, and all of a sudden there's four or five low-flying black helicopter sounds of explosion and gunfire. You would think you're at war.
This has been going on for years. You know, look, we've seen this for years. There have been, this is out of place. The federal government, the U.S. Army, they've been readying, they've been preparing for domestic unrest for decades. I've talked about it. I talked about it 3 years ago when I said my source within DHS said that we were going to have a civil war. Okay. They're preparing for a civil war. And, you know, people laughed and they said, oh, come on, your source, you don't have a source, those are voices in your head. And look what happened subsequent to, that revelation. And of course, even previous to that, but now it has really stepped up. Preparations are accelerating exponentially. The federal government has militarized the police forces. We have tanks, we have armored personnel carriers. We've got the weaponry that rivals the military. When I say we, I'm talking about the municipal police agencies who have been hardened. The establishment media, well, their reaction, for example, to military actions on the street, anyone who characterized concerns about the drill is nothing more than, for example, right-wing paranoia. Come on. Since when has the military really been allowed to operate on the streets of America, fight and train on the streets of America? This is why we have a sprawling military bases. But you train where you fight, and we are seeing this urban military, realistic military training exercises with the Green Berets, with the Navy SEALs, the 82nd Airborne Division, for example, with Jade Helm. You're seeing drills in Texas, Utah, Nevada, all across the Southwest and into the North. You're seeing the same outlets that where you're seeing the mainstream news outlets reacting by just simply parroting what the military says. Hey, this is all normal. Normal since when? Pay close attention to this, folks. Dave Hodges talks about this as well. Dave Hodges talks about World War III, the recent military movements in America. He had captured, and if you go to thecommonsenseshow.com, you can see where he talks about the footage taken in Uvalde, Texas, back on May 21st. It was a cargo on a train, just massive amounts of military equipment. All right, obviously the equipment wasn't armed. You know, however, the movements, and this is just one of a number of videos that he has shown. Is there an armed conflict coming in this country? Is it about protecting the people of the United States, or is it about, what's it about? Is it about going against the people of the United States? We stand right now at the precipice of being taken apart from within. We stand at this precipice because we have allowed Barack Hussein Obama, Barry Satora, we've given him a pass, we've given George W. Bush a pass, we've given everyone a pass. Now it's time to reap the unfortunate damage that has been sown from within. So we need to pay very close attention to what's taking place here in this country. Very close.
Yeah, and I want to hit on this news article. I know we're coming up against top of the hour break. We can start now and get to the rest of it on the other side. Yesterday, this came out from the Saudi press. United States blew up World Trade Center to create war on terror. You heard that correctly. The Saudi press, still furious over the U.S. Senate's unanimous vote to approve a bill that allows the families of 9/11 victims to sue Saudi Arabia, has come out and said the U.S. created 9/11 and blew up the World Trade Centers in order to create this war on terror. The article was written by a Saudi legal expert and claims that America threatens to expose documents that prove Saudi involvement in the attacks are part of a long-standing U.S. policy that he calls victory by means of archives. We're going to get into this a little bit on the other side, as it is important, but at the same time, it's also propaganda, from what I can tell.
Well, I think much of it is, look, the 28 pages that were redacted were simply redacted, in my view, to protect the people, the Saudi, the relationships between the Saudis and the Bushes and the Saudis and the Republicans and Democrats in Congress. Yes, both the business relationships, the oil, the gas, the assets, the banking, everything is incestuous, but the criminal cabal within the CIA is responsible for a lot of the relationships that we see. But the 28 pages are just a mere drop in the bucket compared to really what is the truth out there. And the truth, folks, let me just say this. This was planned. I mean, 9/11 was planned, but to what end? To what end was to create this war on terror? You're correct, yes. But it was more than that. The psychological conditioning, look at the Tavistock Institute, look at what has happened since 9/11. Look at how we gave up our freedom and are giving up, continue to give up our freedoms for the illusion of security. You know, on the other side, let me ask you a question. Would you track your kids via microchip? Would you allow that to take place?
All 10 of them, I would, yep.
Interesting. You're listening to the Hagman Hagman Report. We're going to be right back, right after the network break. Stay with us.
This is the Global Star Radio Network.